Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. Wanted to go over some news, at least an opinion from our good friend Paul Krugman on what could happen to the U.S. if we lose the greatest law that has ever been created, the greatest spending bill potential in the history of mankind, the Build Back Better Act. Well, to hear what Mr. Krugman has to say and his all of his incredible insights, let's go to the New York Times. And then I'm going to obviously refute what Paul Krugman says, but I'm going to do it in a little bit different way. We all know that this is what he's going to say. Spending is good for the poor, and therefore we need to do it because prices are rising, and therefore if we don't give poor people money, then they can't afford to put food on the table, and then their kids won't be able to go to school, then they won't get educated, then their kids will go into a life of crime, and it's this downward spiral, this feedback loop. And therefore, if we don't give people money, then the whole world is going to go to hell in a handbasket. And what he fails to discuss is how giving people money without them producing is going to lead to most likely higher prices, which puts them in most likely a worse spot than they were to begin with in aggregate total. But that's low-lying fruit. I can smash Paul Krugman on those talking points all day long. I want to take a little bit different approach. Let's start by going over this paragraph. Failure to enact a decent... What is decent? See, he's got the exact same problem that we outlined with Sam Harris and with, I forgot the gentleman that he interviewed. He's doing the exact same thing that they were doing in that podcast that I criticized. Hopefully that was a respectful criticism, because I think both of those individuals should deserve a level of respect. And I'm not here to condemn anyone that I'm not talking to. I'm not here to throw anyone under the bus other than politicians and central planners. I'll do that all day long. But as far as Sam or any of his guests, I'm not here to condemn them. But I do want to point this out, because this seems to be a common thread with a lot of people in economics who I think get it wrong, and also a lot of people in science or medicine that I think might not be seeing the mandates from an accurate perspective. Let's get into this here. A failure to enact a decent, again, what is that? Social agenda would condemn millions of American children to poor health and low earnings in adulthood. Pretty bold claim right there. So basically what he's saying is that if a country doesn't enact what he would consider a decent welfare system, that the country basically has no chance of having a middle class. And it's the poor are just going to get worse off year after year after year, and generation after generation after generation. I would first ask Mr. Krugman to point out the country that has successfully taken a specific group of people and brought them up into the middle class and the upper middle class as a result of welfare. Go ahead and, Josh, cue the Jeopardy music. All right, let's keep going here. It would condemn, it just so you know, it's a rhetorical question. There, you can't show me a country. That was my point there. And that's courtesy of all the books I've read on with Thomas Sowell. He's pointed that out many times. Moving on. It would condemn millions more to inadequate medical care and financial ruin if they got ill, because that's what happens when people lack adequate health insurance. I thought this was really interesting, because as you guys know, if you watched my videos yesterday, one of the things that New York is proposing in a bill, and I wish I was making this up, but I'm not. Actually, let's go to my Twitter feed and we'll check it out. These are some of the bills that are being voted on in New York. And this is at the beginning of January 5th. I knew it was sometime at the beginning of the year. So these bills, they might get passed, might not, but there's a probability they will. And here, Patrick Burke, says upcoming bill to eliminate this group of people's access to health insurance. So I'd be very curious as to what Mr. Krugman thinks about this bill, seeing as how he is such an adamant proponent of absolutely everyone having health insurance. Interesting question. But even aside from the intense risks of climate catastrophe, well, Josh, there's something else I didn't realize. We've moved on. See, when I was growing up, it was global warming. You probably don't remember that because Josh is about 19 years old. But I'm sure most of you that were born in the 70s or the 80s, you remember that. It started off with global warming, and then it moved to climate change. It seems like now we've gone from climate change to climate catastrophe. So, not saying that we shouldn't worry about climate change, but what I am saying is the likes of Krugman and the central planners don't care about the climate. They just care about pushing a specific political narrative that is going to allow them to gain more power, more control. Let's move on. I'm not speculating here, he says. There's overwhelming evidence. Again, what does overwhelming mean? So help, you know, that's like safe and effective. It's like dangerous. I don't know the definition. Like, how do you define overwhelming? It can be, and it's completely subjective. That's why that term is just really meaningless. But what's interesting is I want to say, wow, overwhelming. Well, let me try to understand how he is defining overwhelming. Let me click on the actual study. So, of course, it doesn't go to a study. It just goes to another New York Times article. And this is most likely one of Krugman's cronies, a way to break the cycle of poverty. And so this individual goes on and on and on about the benefits of welfare, food stamps, Medicaid, the government providing early pre-kindergarten. And he lists this study from a half century ago with a whopping 123 kids. Now, it is pretty incredible that they followed them, but relatively low sample size. But he gives all, you know, hats off to him. He gives all of these studies and references them where it seems as though the lot of the poor has actually gotten better as a result of poverty. But unfortunately, what we're doing here is we're making the number one error in statistics. That is where you're confusing correlation and causation. So you can get a lot of correlations here. And the one I always like to use is the one where they say that where kids that go to college have X better result later on in life. I'm sure you guys have heard that a million times. That kids who go to college earn this much more than kids who don't go to college. As if college has something to do with that. And they never sit there and scratch their head and say, wait a minute here. Is there something unique about kids that go to college other than the fact that they go to college? I don't know. Maybe their parents raised them in a household that prioritizes education. Maybe the fact that they got good grades throughout school, not that this is any type of predictive measurement. I got terrible grades. Maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe the fact that they worked hard enough. You know what? I think, just on a side note, I think getting good grades is a great predictor of whether or not you're going to make like $100,000 a year. It's a very, very poor predictor as to whether or not you're going to get rich. I would say there's probably an inverse correlation to people's getting actually what would be considered rich, quote unquote, or wealthy with their GPA throughout high school. But I digress. So anyway, you could see that these kids that got better grades in grade school and in high school, maybe they're showing discipline, and maybe that discipline is actually why when they got out of college that they found more financial success. You see, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's college. And they just sit there and look, well, this group went to college, that group didn't, therefore it's college. And that's a very cartoonish, it's a very childish way to look at the data. Don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but it's very consistent with a lot of the CNN viewers when they form a view of the medicine mandates. It's this childlike ignorance when it comes to actually exploring the data and trying to figure out, is there a causal effect here or is this just correlation?
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
So you say, George, how can you be so sure? Well, let me show you. Let's go to a chart of the actual money that was spent. Actually, let me go back here because he makes a point of talking about the 1964. So critics have used the supplemental. This is another thing that really frustrates me. It's this political correctness taken to an extreme. So when I was growing up, this was just simply food stamps. And that's why it was the food stamp of 1964. But for some reason, today, people are just way too fragile to say that they're on food stamps. So we've got to call it Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. And back in the day, you actually, they had stamps, if I'm not mistaken, and they had like these things that would make it obvious that they were paying with food stamps. But now you'll notice they give them like an ATM card. So you can't tell who in line is actually paying with food stamps and who isn't. So one thing I would say here, and I think this is very relevant, is what's the probability of someone succeeding in life if they are this emotionally unstable? Like, you guys know as well as I do, life is hard. And to do well at a job, it's difficult. And try starting a business. If you want to talk about something that's difficult, something that's stressful, something where you're constantly having to solve problems, and something that you're doing that's constantly putting you in the line of fire. Look at my Twitter feed every once in a while. Or maybe look at some of the comments. Look at what some people say about me. And sure, it might be trolls, this and that, but they're always trying to put you down. They're always trying to make fun of you. I have people make fun of my hair. I have people make fun of the way I talk. I have people that criticize me constantly on these videos. And you know what? I don't care. Why? Because I'm not emotionally unstable. I'm not fragile. When I was growing up, kids were taught to be anti-fragile. Remember, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. What happened to that? See, that's the way I was brought up. So I can take these things and it doesn't affect me. I don't lose sleep or the fact that someone called me some sort of name on Twitter, as an example. And that has led, or that has been one of the things that has made me very successful in life. If I didn't have a thick skin, I'm almost positive that I would not have had the success in life that I've enjoyed. So why do we have to coddle these people, right? And I would ask those people that maybe would argue that we should coddle them, are you doing more harm than good? This, again, should be a cost-benefit analysis, that maybe being too politically correct, or I would argue politically correct in the first place, maybe that is doing more harm than good because you're making people too fragile. When in the real world, that fragility is detrimental. But let's stay on focus here. So the Food Stamp Act in 1964. So this critique is flat out wrong, he says. In a 2018 report by the Center of Budget Policy Priorities concluded that food stamps has helped to dramatically reduce child poverty and that twice as many children would live in deep poverty without the program. Really? Okay. Well, this should be very easy to determine. If welfare, just in general, it's obvious that it helps people come out of poverty, then if this is true, then the more money we spend on welfare, the less poor people we should have, especially over time, because one of their arguments is it breaks the cycle of poverty, meaning it doesn't go from one generation to the next generation to the next generation. So if we look at it over, let's say, 30 or 40 years, the more money that was spent on welfare, the less poverty there should be. All right. Well, here is the amount that we are actually spending on welfare. And so let's look at the date here. So this is 1964, let's call it. And I don't think this is adjusted for inflation. And obviously we had a significant amount of inflation in the 1970s. But from 1981 to, let's say, 2016, we did not have this much inflation. I can tell you that. We didn't go from call it, $300 billion to $1.1 trillion. We didn't have that much inflation. So in real terms, this would have had to have grown significantly. Let's just say that. So you would assume, if Paul Krugman and his crony at the New York Times was correct, that a chart of poverty would have the opposite line, the opposite trend line. As this goes up, the amount of poverty goes straight down. But if we look at the rate of poverty, what do we see? So here is 1964. And what they'll say is that, oh, look, since 1964, the rate of poverty has gone down. But what they don't include in that is the fact that the rate of poverty was going down prior to 1964. And in fact, if you look at this trend line, it was going down at a faster rate than after we started the welfare program, the food stamps, to begin with. But going back to my original point, if this was a chart that was layered over the chart of social spending right here, again, we should see this going straight up along with the chart of social spending. But we don't see it go straight up, do we? We see it flatline and plateau. So looking at the macro, how can you come to the conclusion that the more social spending we do, the better it is for the poor? Obviously not. And obviously there's some level of nuance there that Mr. Krugman and his crony at the New York Times are completely missing. Now, are they missing that intentionally or unintentionally? I'll let you be the judge. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Remember to always stand up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. See you on the next video.